and 98.5 FM. Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back, everybody. 9:03 the time, hour number three here on this Tuesday, May 12th, 2026. Greg Gaston, Eli Savoy, and Jay Hammer broadcasting live and local from the Family Leisure Studios. You can check out Family Leisure at 2120 Witten Road, just north of I-40. Right now, 62, but it already feels like 70. 82 for the high, plenty of sunshine and plenty of sunshine throughout the week. And this weekend looks to be great as well. So great weather to get out there and play 18 holes. Oh, speaking of that, it's time to talk some golf with Mickey Barker.
It's time to hit the links and talk some golf. It's Mickey and Friends. Mickey Barker, administrator of golf for the Bluff City, joins Greg and Eli each week. Now here's Mickey Barker with Greg and Eli.
He is Mickey Barker, the golf administrator for the City of Memphis, PGA professional and Hall of Fame golfer from Lipscomb University. You can follow him on Twitter at MickeyBarker1. Good morning, Mickey.
Good morning, Greg. Eli?
I know you've brought along a friend, not physically, but he will join us via the phone a little bit later on in this segment. Scott Fleming, who is the architect for the clubhouse at Pine Hill. Oh, no,
at Galloway.
At Galloway, excuse me. And now will be the architect for Audubon, so he'll join us a little bit later on. How's everything going?
Great. It's fantastic. We got some rain finally. We've been talking about that the last few weeks. And hopefully later this week get some warmer temperatures. And we're getting there. We're in the heart of the season now, and things are great. As both of you guys saw out at Audubon yesterday, we had the middle school championship out there and just people everywhere, which is what we want to see.
How often do you have tournaments like that?
We have, you know, during the season, middle school golf is in the spring and then high school golf is in the fall. And so for those couple months, April, May, and then also September, October, we have a number of events like that. And then throughout the summer, we'll have some SNEDS events through the Tennessee Golf Foundation that we'll have typically on Mondays. But we have a lot of kids, a lot of parents coming out.
Is that at pretty much all of the courses, or is it right, so Audubon, Galloway?
Be the next question.
We've been playing more at Audubon since we reopened, since we have more amenities there, driving range. But we do several events throughout the year at Fox and at Whitehaven. We try to steer away from Galloway. We still have a few, but it's still in such demand at Galloway for the public that we try to keep fewer of those events. But we still host a few.
So when you have those events that the charity events and things of that nature, normally on Mondays for the most part, how can people, if they do want to inquire about that for the future, how can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, typically on Mondays and Fridays and Saturdays, most of our events, especially our charity fundraiser events, are on those days.
Oh, they're on Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
Not too much on Sundays, not very many, but there'll be some. Most of our events are on Monday, Friday, or Saturday.
Yeah, Monday.
That's our biggest days. Just contact the golf course specifically, and the facility manager there will set everything up and get it going.
You talked about the SNEDS tour. The weekend was really, it was a really cool throwback weekend in golf. On the Champions Tour, that's the senior guys, Boo Weekly. I haven't heard his name in I don't know how long. I didn't even know he still played. And he went out there and he won an event. And we nearly had Ricky Fowler winning an event at the Truist. But we had a first-timer from Norway. And I forget his name already.
Rattan. Christopher Rattan.
Yeah, so he won. But the biggest story was Brant Snedeker at Myrtle Beach going out and winning. He nearly won several weeks ago. So he's been playing well, but he was kind of out of the minds of most golf fans for a number of years now.
Yeah, he's been dealing with a lot of injuries. I heard yesterday it was exploratory sternum surgery, which Ooh. Does not sound good at all, especially for a golfer. So he'd been coming back from that, really trying hard. Obviously, he is the President's Cup captain for this year, and has been playing a lot and really improving and getting back to the status where he was before. 45 years old, and he won his 10th event. It's fantastic.
Yeah, you start getting into double-digit tour wins. That's a heck of a career you put together.
Yeah, it to me, it's amazing. You know, multiple wins on the tour is amazing, but to win 10, you know, that's high cotton there.
I don't think we're going to have the debate though whether he should pick himself for the President's Cup like Keegan Bradley for the Ryder Cup.
Yeah, they were interviewing him. No chance.
Even though there was the signature event in North Carolina with a great field, although Scottie Scheffler was not in the field getting ready for the PGA this weekend, the field at Myrtle Beach was pretty good. You had Brooks Koepka was in the field. They had a number of pretty good golfers. So he didn't win in the full field, which was happening basically at the not full field, but with the top tier players. But it's a win that will get him into the PGA this week, give him the 2-year exemption, get him into all the majors. So, yeah.
I really hope this is what kind of a sneak peek of what the coming years will look like. You'll have the signature events like we had at Quail Hollow, but then you'll have the other events, the all secondary events, for lack of a better term, but they'll have strong fields that are just not playing in those signature events, like this week with Snedeker winning and Koepka playing and many top-tier players in that event.
Do you think they can have enough events where there would be one of those every week?
I think so. I think there's a demand for the core golf fan. It may not be on network television, but the Golf Channel. I think there's enough demand that they'll have one every week.
The other thing from the Truist was Alex Fitzpatrick. It's pretty crazy. He gets the win with his brother, and it's kind of like, okay, obviously Matthew's one of the hottest golfers out there. So, like, I think people are like, yeah, you won with your brother, but your brother's awesome. Like, really, what are you going to be able to do on tour? And now he's come out and he's had two top tens in signature events. Like, the dude's playing unbelievable golf.
Yeah, he really is. And I think he's probably going to be on the Ryder Cup team if he continues. You know, he's setting himself up for next year to be on the Ryder Cup team with his brother. But yeah, I think we were a little bit unaware of how good a player he was. We knew he won on the DP World Tour. But, you know, how does that translate to the PGA Tour? Well, obviously it translates pretty good.
he had the rough start and he kind of went away and I was like, okay, he's done. But then he came back and then gave himself the chance until late there. But I was like, man, this dude, the last thing I would have expected is coming off that win that he'd come out in two signature events and place top 10 in both of them.
Yeah, we may have been wrong who carried who in the partnership down in Louisiana. So, but fantastic player.
The Fitzpatricks have absolutely dominated golf, even though we still see McIlroy and Scheffler and those guys. But between those two, I mean, those two brothers are just really, really
and
good.
And from what I understand, just the nicest of guys that you could be around. Just super. One of the guys on the radio yesterday was talking about he was sitting in the lounge at Quail Hollow watching the final, the last few holes, and he happened to be sitting beside Matt Fitzpatrick. Oh, right. He stayed around, obviously, watching his brother. And he asked him, he said, how is this? Sitting in white. He goes, this is excruciating. This is awful. He said, and when I'm out there, I'm in control of it. But watching my brother, he said, this is terrible.
Well, I can't imagine what it's like, you know, because you know this has been your brother's dream. You helped him get to the point where he could get out there on tour, and then to see him perform like this. Then he starts beating you. Now he's kind of like, wait a second. He's not supposed to be beating me. This is not how this thing works.
Right, yeah. That's got to be an odd dynamic right there.
What do you know about Aronimink Golf Club? That's right outside of Philadelphia in Newtown Square. That'll be the host site of the PGA Championship this week.
Yeah, this is our PGA of America Club Professionals. This is our championship. You know, there will be a lot of club pros there. There's 20 in the field. From what I understand, your typical northeastern golf course, you know, cool season grasses and really undulating greens, which this time of year they'll be able to get very, very quick. Was hearing that the rough is a little bit spotty, so maybe not as thick as it possibly could have been in August or later, but it will be a it really sets up for Scheffler. You get plenty of room to drive it. You can be aggressive off the tee, but then you have to hit your spots going into the greens. And so who does that set up best for but Scottie Scheffler?
Yep, Scottie's the defending champion of the PGA. Who else are you looking for this week?
Well, Rory, you know, he didn't play great at Quail Hollow to his standards. So I think he'll be in the mix. He typically plays pretty well in the PGA. So I look for him to play very well. Personally, I would love to see Spieth get in the mix so that we could talk about the Grand Slam a little bit. And who knows, he might be for a couple days, but then he has trouble putting four rounds together.
All right. Well, Rory and Tommy Fleetwood both are tied for the course record. So that bodes well for them. And Tommy Fleetwood certainly is a guy that you have to look at pretty much in every major right now as a possible guy to get that first one.
Absolutely. As well as he hits the ball strikers, he's one of the top.
We've been talking a lot about the anticipation of when the work will begin on the new clubhouse at Audubon. We know that that's coming up rapidly, and we're very pleased to be joined by the guy who will be putting it together, the architect of what will be the Audubon Clubhouse, and was the architect of the Galloway as well. Scott Fleming joining us now on the program. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Doing fantastic.
Great.
I imagine the cost of putting together a clubhouse now compared to even putting together the cost of the Galloway Clubhouse, a lot different.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that was done, I think, 25 years ago. So, yeah, the cost has just about doubled since COVID. So you can imagine what the cost would be, you know, compared to 25 years ago. But, yes, they have gone up. But the good news is we've got the money to do it. So that's good news.
Yeah, the total project at Galloway in 2001 for the golf course and the clubhouse was $3.5 million. We're a little wow. bit different now at Audubon.
Well, we are, and we're targeting a $14 million clubhouse, which bids are going to be secured in the month of June with construction slated to start in July. So between the City of Memphis and Tennessee Golf Foundation, which is a perfect public-private partnership, the same method the city used to fund the Leftwich Tennis Center, that's the way this is going to get funded. So the money is there, thanks to a lot of good hard work by the mayor and Councilman Ford Canale and Chase Carlisle. We were able to secure the funds to get it done.
Can you tell folks a little bit about what they'll see with this clubhouse and the things that you kind of how it sets up out there and the things that you're kind of excited about that you've been able to put into this clubhouse?
Absolutely. I'm a lifelong Memphian and golfer, so this is a sport I love. So this is a project I really enjoy being a part of. The course was redesigned years ago, about 6 years ago, by Bill Bergen, and the site for the clubhouse has always been located right by the parking lot that's there now, between the parking lot and number 18 green. And the components that are in the clubhouse include a state-of-the-art pro shop for Bruno and Mickey Barker to use, the first tee of Memphis headquarters, which I'm really excited about, which will include a classroom and simulators and administrative offices for the first tee to run their programs to teach the youth of Memphis the life skills using the game of golf to do that, which we're real excited about. There'll be a full-service restaurant with a 270-degree panoramic view of the course, including number 18 green, a full-service bar, and a private dining room. There'll also be a Hall of Fame spine that runs right through the middle of the complex that connects all these elements together, where we can showcase artifacts and photographs of great Memphis golfers like Kerry Middlecoff and Lauren Roberts, and we could run down the list.
We'll probably
and the cart
have a
storage
room
underneath.
For Greg Gaston.
Right? Hall of Shame. Might be That'll be the Hall of Shame over there.
right. But it's going to be a state-of-the-art facility, and I'll just say that Leftwich has garnered national attention. It's received some national awards because the city did it right, and the city has chosen to do this right, too, without cutting corners. And like Leftwich has secured a pro national tournament, this facility, we believe, will just help the city secure more regional and national tournaments. So we're excited about that, too.
Scott, what's the square footage? And again, for those who don't know, give us a visual of where it's going to sit.
Okay. Sure. It's about 21,000 square feet, the total size of the building. It's two stories with cart storage underneath. If you're familiar with the driving range that was just built along Cherry Road next to the Botanic Gardens and kind of around the corner from Live at the Garden, is right across the street where the parking lot is now located, and the temporary clubhouse, which is just a trailer right now, it's going to be situated in that general area.
How far away from the 18th green will it be?
It will be about, I would say about, just thinking about the wedge shot, I guess about 40 yards.
Okay.
And the 18th green is, you know, elevated.
Yeah.
Well, the way this building will be situated, the upper level where the restaurant and the bar is located ought to be just about eye level with the 18th green, which will be really a cool view.
Yeah, I do. I think that will be awesome. I was just wondering. Yeah. So it's out of range of wayward shots into 18. Yeah.
Well, if you're headed into the clubhouse from 18, then no, you do not need to be playing golf. You need to go to Leftwich and pick up tennis.
Oh, you use the wrong club.
Get across the street to the driving range and do some work.
Right. Great, he's talking to you.
Yeah, I hear that. No, 18 is one of my favorite holes in the whole city. Yeah. I actually play that pretty well. But I'm still trying to picture, will it be very close to the third green?
No, it'll be across the cart path. If you know where the putting green is now,
right,
it will be directly
between the parking lot and the green.
Directly across the parking lot from, not across the park, across the cart path from the putting green.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. If you know where the chain link fence that secures the carts right now,
yes,
is immediately adjacent to the south of that cart storage.
So Scott, right, what's the game plan as far as when construction will begin? How long will it take? Will it affect parking in the area for people when they go play at Audubon and all that good stuff?
Right. Well, we met yesterday with six construction managers who will be submitting proposals to actually construct the project. That selection will be made next week, and once a construction manager is on board, they'll bid the project in June. Construction will start in July, and it should be ready to be open next August the 27th. In the meantime, we've made it really clear with the construction managers that we have a golf course that needs to remain 100% operational. So yes, there will be some inconveniences with construction, staging, and all the rest, but we'll do our best to minimize that disruption so that people can continue to use Audubon, the golf course facilities, and not be inconvenienced during construction.
You know, there's a lot of awards. I tell Scott this all the time. There's a lot of awards from different magazines and things that come out for clubhouses, and I feel like the job that Scott and his team have done, they're going to be in the running for a lot of these new clubhouse awards.
Wow, they give out awards for clubhouses?
They do.
Scott, are you an architect with other stuff as well?
We are. Yes, we are. We've done a number of other projects. Cairo High School, Bartlett High School.
Oh, wow.
The University of Memphis Law School downtown, the music building on the campus there.
Beautiful.
And then we manage projects as well. We're managing the airport and the Liberty Bowl project and the FedEx Forum. So we've got a lot of projects in the hopper. We're thankful for all the work we've got, and we're bullish on Memphis. We love Memphis. It's home, and I just love projects like this that kind of lift our city when we need it the most.
Since we have you on the show, it looks like everything's gone really well over at Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. Everything on target again to be ready by, I guess, August and the start of the season?
Yes, sir. We're going to be done in July.
Whoa.
We've got a great contractor, Barton Mallow. The U of M has done a fabulous job. Dr. Ed Scott, Dr. Hardgraves, Tim Duncan, they've all led a great project over there from the ownership all the way down. It's made for a really great project. And, you know, we transferred the project from the city of Memphis to the U of M, and that went very smoothly. But you're going to be blown away at the stadium when it's complete. It is going to be something unlike any other stadium in the country.
Can't wait for that, but also can't wait to when that clubhouse is constructed. Love the golf course, what they did to Audubon, everything from the driving range to just the amenities. It's a fabulous public course. You did a great job at Galloway. I can't wait to see this one when it's all finished at Audubon as well. Scott, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Continued success.
Thank you, guys. Have a great day. Thank you. Thank you, Mickey. Bye.
I was going to ask him about the roads leading to the airport, but I know he has nothing to do with that. But yeah, so they're doing that project as well.
Yeah, Scott is he's a great Memphian, and be careful if you challenge him on the golf course because he can play very well too. So.
Wow. All right. Anything else? Anything else coming up here that people need to know about? Anything you need to sign up for, register for?
We have the Galloway Championship coming up this Saturday. It will be one of our first course championships. Deadline will be Wednesday. MemphisPublicLinks.com. You can go and sign up for that. Should be a great day. Weather looks good. Golf course is really coming into shape, so we're excited about it.
All right, Mickey, thank you as always.
Thanks, guys.
That is Mickey Barker, the golf administrator for the City of Memphis, the PGA professional and Hall of Fame golfer at Lipscomb University. Follow him on Twitter at MickeyBarker1. He's with us every single Tuesday during the golf season from the Masters until the playoffs wrap up, the FedEx Cup is awarded. We will take a break. You're tuned in to Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Broadcasting from the Family Leisure Studio, we are Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Now back to Sports 56 Mornings.
Good morning.
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back, everyone. 9:27 is the time. We thank Mickey Barker, Scott Fleming for joining us on the program. We're going to jump back into NBA talk, draft talk as well. If you'd like to participate, you can hit us up on the Sissy's Log Cabin listener lines. You can text in or call in at 901-360-8255. Last night, Cavaliers over the Pistons, 112-103 to even that series up at 2. Cavaliers got to the free throw line 34 times. The Pistons, just 12. And J.B. Bickerstaff was not happy about that after the game. And out west, it was the Thunder knocking off the Lakers, 115-110. Valiant effort by Los Angeles, who played the entire series without Luka Doncic. But not enough. The Thunder win the series 4-0. So the Thunder go to 8-0 in the playoffs. They are the defending NBA champions and right now look unstoppable. But LeBron James was stopped, even though he played tremendous, 40 minutes, 24 points, and 12 rebounds. When I say he was stopped, his season comes to a screeching halt. And now the question is, does his career come to an end? Will he play again next year? If he does, which I think he will, where will he play? And again, you're talking about not only one of the greatest NBA players of all time, one of the greatest athletes of all time. And, you know, most athletes end their careers with a loss. I mean, there's only a few that go out with winning a championship and then saying sayonara. I mean, I'm sure there have been some, but not many. So that's to be expected. But if he were to come back, and if he would sign with L.A., and that's assuming, again, the Lakers want him back, he wants to stay in Los Angeles, what do the Lakers do? What can they do? I mean, again, Luka Doncic is on that team. He's a hell of a player, but he's got to stay healthy.
Well, I think the Lakers are just interesting overall. I mean, they have very little committed beyond this year. Obviously, Luka is, but Reeves has a player option, which I'm sure he's going to decline because he'll get paid a hell of a lot more money than his player option is for. You've got the LeBron situation. So I wonder how the Lakers go about trying to build around Luka to be a contender. We know the Lakers, they're always looking for the big move, and they don't like to do rebuilds and stuff like that. They're trying to always, because they know they can sign basically every free agent in the world, all that. So they're always trying to be competitive. But what do they do around Luka to try and be competitive when you just got swept by Oklahoma City? You know you're nowhere near them right now. What approach do they take this offseason? It's going to be a very, especially if LeBron goes elsewhere, who do they go after? You know, do they, because I don't know, you know, trying to get into the Giannis sweepstakes. I don't know how you do that if you're them with what they've got committed. I don't know what route the Lakers go this offseason.
J-Ham, as good as LeBron has been, even if they are able to retain him, he wants to still play and he wants to play in Los Angeles. Luka, Reeves, if they, again, he opts out and then signs a bigger contract, and LeBron is still not going to be enough.
No, it's not going to be enough. And the interesting thing, I'm glad Eli mentioned that about the Lakers, is because they historically don't like to build organically. They like to just pluck free agents and attract Hollywood, you know, let Hollywood attract the people to come in and the whole deal. But this is a completely different regime now. This is not the bus-owned Lakers. This is a whole different deal. So I'm not sure what direction they're going to go with this.
But like, don't they have to keep LeBron? If LeBron's going to play, isn't it bad PR if they don't offer to bring him back and they let him walk, or is it okay?
I would think it's, I wouldn't say bad PR, but it was something I would offer the man a spot to come back to try to work that back. Something else I'm thinking about, him, like, he may go across town, not across town, but to the other side of the building with his old coach Ty Lue for a season.
Could you imagine he was with the LeBron? It's almost like, well, it's almost
across,
like the
it
Hulk.
Is across town now. It's no longer the same building.
That's right.
Oh, that's right.
But it's almost like the Hulk becoming a heel. For the Lakers fans, he became a Clipper.
Hey,
it's like the Hulk changing. LeBron got a bad guy.
LeBron has no problem leaving if he thinks there's a better situation. He's made that quite clear throughout his career.
You mentioned something very historical on the 30-year mark of Hulk Hogan turning heel. So
right.
But it goes hand in hand.
And he has left before, but he left Cleveland to Miami. But once he got to L.A., I mean, he's established himself. That's his home. He's into all the, you know, the movies, the thing, producing things with
his
company.
He's a Hollywood guy now.
He is a Hollywood guy.
At this point,
Hollywood Hogan.
Knowing he's only – the only reason for him to continue to play – I mean, he's got the records. Like, he doesn't need to keep playing to get to catch career. Like, it's just to try and win another championship. If he doesn't think the Lakers are good enough, like he could simply look at, like, where's my best chance to win a championship? Now, he's not going to go to Oklahoma City, but what's my best chance to win a championship? If he doesn't think that's the Lakers, then he'll go somewhere else if he wants to keep playing.
Again, with me, I think LeBron James wants a finale, and he wants the swan song, and he wants to be, you know, given the rocking chair by the Miami Heat and go through that whole. I think that's, he just doesn't seem like a guy who's going to ride off into the sunset.
I don't think the Lakers are going to throw that Rolls Royce like they did for Kareem.
But I do see him, again, I don't know the guy, but he seems like to me that he would want that attention and want to go out the way he should as either the greatest or second greatest in most people's minds NBA players of all time. Do I see him going anywhere else? No, I really don't. But your point is well taken. If he's coming back for another year, and he's coming back to try to win, and if L.A. doesn't have the pieces. But L.A.'s got Doncic, and they got Reeves. So what else can they do? What can they add if they do decide they want to keep LeBron?
They got to do something they never done before, and that's build organically. They got to go through the draft. They got to take the rough spots. That's not going to sit well with local L.A. people, but we're in a new NBA.
In 1 year, though?
It's going to take time.
Well, he's only going to be there, I think, for a year. I think it's going to be a swan song year. I just don't see him going back to Cleveland. Well, maybe he's a guy that, I don't know, could he go full circle if they even wanted him, Cleveland?
I think part of it, if Cleveland loses this series to Detroit again, and they still can't reach that conference finals, I think Cleveland could look at it and go, or maybe somehow getting LeBron in here and putting it at peace together. I don't know.
Mitchell, Harden, LeBron playing basically the three.
It's a luxury text.
Allen, Mobley. Yeah. I mean, come on. I know.
Yeah, I don't know how they would do it salary wise and all that stuff, be able to make it work. But you know, teams find ways with these things.
Next year can look a lot different in the NBA.
The other thing, too, that I wonder about the Lakers, if LeBron leaves, are they going to act like they think Bronny's an actual NBA player, or are they just going to release him by, if Dad's not here, we don't need you? Like, are they going to continue this act of, no, we didn't draft him because of his dad, we think he's a legitimate NBA player.
They probably try to continue to play him and develop him. Just because they already invested, they already in bed with it. It's like, what do you got, like $5, $6 million on his contract in general, overall? It's
a couple he only makes like a little over $2 million.
Per year?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It was probably pretty much like a $6 million deal or whatever when he signed it. It won't hurt much to continue to roll.
But, I mean, the only guys that are under contract for them next year are Luka, Jared Vanderbilt, Jake LaRavia, Bronny, and Thierro.
So Ayton's not even under contract.
You got player options for Ayton, Reeves, and Marcus Smart. And then you got the rookie options for Dalton Connect. His is up for next year. I don't know if they've made that decision yet or not. But all the, like, LeBron's a free agent. Achimura's a free agent. Kennard's a free agent. Kleber's a free agent. I mean, I know Ayton said he didn't know for sure about his option right now. He said he would kind of leave that up to his agent and trust his agent, all that. Jackson Hayes, who, by the way, was terrific last night. Jackson Hayes was – I did not see the Jackson Hayes game coming like that. Dude, he was – man, oh, man. He last night was everything that you – like when you look at Jackson Hayes, like you hope he will be. Just using his athleticism to be unbelievable, dunking seemingly on every possession, rebounding, everything else. But, yeah, like I don't – I have no idea what the Lakers will look like, but it's, again, like they don't take kindly to, they're not going to be like, you know what, we're going to go through a couple of bad years while we build up draft picks and try and build something. They're going to take big swings and try and figure it out how to win next year.
Absolutely.
Perhaps Pelinka trades Luka back to Dallas. No, I'm kidding.
They run him so fast.
Texter says the Warriors for LeBron, and
I was just going to bring up the Warriors.
You know, that could be a thing where, you know, it's been rumored number of times through the years of him going there, and maybe they do, you know, they could do a sign and trade type situation with Jimmy Butler's contract, and maybe they try and put LeBron, and he goes to join Steph and Draymond, and they try and make a final stand for all those guys kind of at the end of their careers.
Well, Kerr coming back for two more seasons, at least a 2-year deal, tells me after his discussions that they're going to go for it.
They're going to try to go for something.
Yeah, it's not going to be status quo.
I think they're more likely to try and get Giannis. Using that Butler contract.
What about Kawhi? Might not be back in L.A. with the Clippers. I mean, Kawhi could be somebody that's on the move. I mean, this offseason could be a lot of fun. When we've already talked about the possibilities with Giannis and Jaylen Brown. Again, the Grizzlies with Ja seemingly will be dealt. I think this offseason could be a lot of fun. And then there's teams in the West where you wonder, you know, Phoenix, with that owner, they got to do something. I don't know what they can do, but I can't imagine they're going to be status quo. Ishbia, he likes to spend. Dallas, in their position, they're going to try to get back in there. That's why, you know, the Grizzlies, even if they get the pieces right away, the rebuild's still going to take a while.
And Denver said everybody except 15 is on the table.
Right. That's right. That and the coach.
Well, they have to. I mean, at this point, where they are with the salary cap, right. Like you're just in a spot. You're it's hard to add.
Yeah.
And you know you're not good enough.
Right.
So you're kind of like, I don't know what we do.
Get under those aprons and reset.
So the Grizzlies, from a financial standpoint, once they assuming they trade Ja, I mean, they're going to be in a really good spot, are they not? Financially, after trading Jaren, trading Dez.
Yeah, because there'd be a bunch of rookie money.
It depends what they take back. If they have to take back a bad contract or whatever, I mean, it depends what you're taking back for Ja.
When you take, but you got to take back, it's got to be even.
It's got to be within a, I don't know what the exact percentage is. There's different rules on different things. It's a very confusing deal, but.
Yeah, I just think there's going to be so, we know the Grizzlies. It's going to be a lot of changes.
If KCP takes his player option, I mean, that's $20 million. That's over $20 million.
He's going to take that.
There's
the market's not high for KCP right now, is it? So I imagine he would take that. And you got to eat whatever Clark has. I mean, I can't imagine Clark is back, and he's got that legal issue that's still hovering. Unless all of a sudden, like the authorities in Arkansas dropped charges, which I don't see that happening. They caught him, plain and simple. Got him with the goods. So I don't see him being a factor. Because, again, if the Grizzlies use all three picks and don't package or do anything, that's three new players right there that would be coming in. Three rookies that would be coming in. Because, again, the second rounder is the 32nd pick overall.
And Brandon Clark will be expiring next year.
Right.
So
that's – when you have an expiring contract, that's an asset, right?
Yeah, he's 12 and a half.
But
$12.5 million expiring contract is a very
But again, how do you say? Hey, guys, like, got a record now. I don't know. I mean, I could be wrong. I mean, in camp and everything's fine. He's still got the legal thing, like I said, hovering. I just don't picture him being a fact. Then you throw in the fact that he's been injured a bunch. He's not a reliable big. I mean, he was at one point, and he was great to watch.
Yeah, Achilles tear will change that whole
thing. It will change everything. But, you know, getting back to the draft, and we'll talk about this after the break, again, the possibilities for the Grizzlies, more than likely, though, if they stay put at 3 and 1 and 2 goes chalk, although that's questionable whether that will happen with Utah loving DeBonsa but not being able to get him at 2, and Washington owning that first pick. But if the Grizzlies, again, are there at 3 and there's no movement, and the two guys that many believe will be off the board in DeBonsa and with Peterson, that leaves the Grizzlies taking more than likely one of the bigger players, Cameron Boozer or Wilson, and still what do they do with the point guard? Again, Jerome has one more year, and I think he's very capable of being the starting point guard. Down the line, down the road, after his contract runs out, is he going to want to get out, go to another team? I'm sure he will. So that's why I'm thinking the point guard is so important to look for the future, who that guy will be. Because Scottie Pippen Jr. is a good rotation player, serviceable. Cam Spencer did some good things last year. But these are not starting point guards, in my opinion. Spot starters in Pippen, but you need to solidify that position. So can you do that in the draft? Or can you do that in a trade? We'll talk more about that when we return.
I think, too, if they use the trade exception that they got in the Jaren deal to take on money, and they're, you know, and that could be in a Ja trade where they take on extra money on top of Ja's salary, again, taking on maybe multiple bad deals, something like that. That, again, puts them in a, at least for the next year, or so, depending on what kind of how long those contracts are that you take back. Again, if you take a Jakob Poeltl contract, I mean, that thing's three, four more years that you're dealing with that. So, yeah, I mean, they're not going to be in a great spot as far as the cap is concerned either way once they trade Ja, because they're going to definitely take money back, at least that much, and may take more back to try and get rid of him, because it's going to be the way to get rid of him is – hopefully you can get an expiring deal or something like that of a bad contract that's even worse than what a team will look at Ja's contract being.
Yeah.
So it all comes down to that. Folks, if you got a move coming up, talk to the folks at Black Tie Moving. They'll take care of that for you. They take care of you. They take care of your belongings, making sure your move goes smoothly. No issues, no problems, no stress for you. It's never an easy time when you're moving. All kinds of things that you're trying to deal with, that you're thinking about. Last thing you want to be worried about is whether your stuff's going to get where it's going without any issues and without any problems. The folks at Black Tie Moving, the professionals, will take care of that for you. They'll do really as much or as little as you need from them, whether you want them to do everything, including the packing and unpacking, or you just need to pick up the stuff and move it, or maybe you need storage in an interim time. All of that, they can take care of it for you at Black Tie Moving. All you got to do is give them a call at 901-316-6196, 316-6196, or go to blacktiemoving.com/Memphis. Talk to the professionals, the experts at Black Tie Moving.
You're listening to Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Available locally on your radio dial as well as around the world online at sports56whbq.com. Take us with you everywhere by downloading the Sports 56 app. And at home, just say, Alexa, play Sports 56. Wherever you are, it's easy to stay tuned to Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Now back to Sports 56 Mornings.
Good morning!
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
One thing I forgot to mention earlier. How about Dylan last night? Just out there sitting right underneath the basket. All iced out, just chilling at the Lakers, like just there to annoy LeBron. Even when he's eliminated from the playoffs, he can't help but try to annoy LeBron James.
The part that made me smile was, like you said, he's iced out and he's smiling, and I see nothing but diamonds just coming across his teeth. Like this man went got a gold grill just to sit front row.
Let it go, Dylan. Let it go.
He is something, man. Like it's just like that, like.
Who
just
is he with?
Perfect. I don't know who that was sitting next to him. I was like his agent or who it was, but it's just perfect for him to make sure he sits right underneath the basket, like where you're like LeBron's trying to shoot free throws, and it's like you're like Dylan. He can't resist the temptation. He's got to do it,
and he can use the cover. I'm there to see my Canadian buddies in SGA and Lou Dort.
Oh God! It's just when LeBron was going to shoot that free throw, like I couldn't tell what was going on, and then all of a sudden the camera shows, and I'm like, really? Like Dylan Brooks is sitting right underneath that basket? Are you kidding me?
And shout out to the NBC cameras for putting the focus.
Dude,
it
was awesome. And like the announcers at first didn't even say anything. Then all of a sudden there was like, I don't remember. I think Grant Hill first who said something like, is that Dylan Brooks? Like it was just kind of like, is Dylan Brooks really sitting right there? And do you know who the dude was that got the drink spilled on him? The big baggy pants dude that got the beer knocked out of his hand by the pass.
I can't think of his name, but I've seen him around.
I assume he's a celebrity. He looked like a celebrity. And if you're sitting front row at the Lakers game, I just assume you're some board. I was like, I don't know if this is a YouTube guy or whatever.
Maybe an influencer, which they're celebrities now.
But yeah, but I was like, dude, he just got, because the pass, which blasted the beer out of his hand all over him. I give him credit because he just caught the basketball and like he didn't react to his beer spilling all over him. He just grabbed the basketball and like held it out for the official. Like, here you go, here's your basketball back. Like, dude, you're covered in beer right now. React to that.
Oh, he's not messing with the beer like the man in the World Series that was holding two beers and he still made the catch on the on the fly ball. So, hey.
I was reading this story during the break about the Utah Jazz and what they may do with the pick. Austin Ainge. Did you know Austin Ainge is the president of the Jazz?
Yes.
I don't know why I didn't know that. So Austin Ainge was in the room when the lottery was taking place on Sunday. And the story from the Salt Lake Tribune says, once Utah found out that they were picking in the top four, they were picking number two, he was giddy. I mean, he jumping around everything. And then he started fist pumping, grinning ear to ear, and then he reaches over and he gives a fist bump to, guess who? Memphis general manager Zach Kleiman. Reached over and fist bumped Kleiman after he got the number, or the Utah Jazz got the number two pick. But for whatever reason, maybe I heard that and forgot about it, but that Danny Ainge's son is the general manager or the president. Wait, is it president or general manager of the Utah Jazz?
I think president.
Yeah, president of the Utah Jazz. De'Aaron Fox tonight is questionable. Might not be, or tomorrow night. When's the game with the Spurs, Minnesota? Is it
tonight? That's tonight.
That's right. So De'Aaron Fox is questionable. Is it an ankle? I think it's an ankle. And we know that Wemby will be playing. No penalties from the elbow. So he's in there. So you know, no harm, no foul for him. But if De'Aaron Fox, who hasn't been consistently good, we've seen spurts of De'Aaron Fox. He has been great. As you mentioned, the youngster has come off the bench to be fantastic from Rutgers. Yeah, Dylan Harper's been really, really good. Obviously, you have Castle and other pieces. But tonight, there's the possibility that De'Aaron Fox won't be able to go. The Spurs, as I mentioned earlier, 10.5-point favorites in this game. Fox has an ankle issue. But again, questionable. So not doubtful. Doesn't mean he won't play, but is questionable for this game. Wemby will be playing. Any chance Minnesota, which won game, was it game one? Yeah, game one they won in San Antonio. Can they repeat and get a win on the road in San Antonio?
They can, but I think that Ant emptied his clip the other night. I'm just worried about Ant and the knees going forward because it looked like he left everything in that fourth quarter out there. But they can get a win, but I don't think they will.
Yeah, I mean, if he can be superhuman again, I guess, at fourth quarter, I mean, he was just – you talk about just get willing a team to a win. Like, that's what it was. He was just refused to let them lose. You know, when he's in that mode, certainly they can do it. But I think we're going to see the Wimby from game three. Like, I think it's just going to be that. Like, he's going to be extra motivated now of, like, okay, like, y'all got one wrath of me with my elbow. Now I'm just going to show you the other wrath where I'm just going to dominate the basketball game, and there's nothing you guys can do about it.
And I'm looking for some form of retaliation, if not against Wimby, against somebody in a San Antonio uniform.
Well, if you are Minnesota, now that you actually have seen that you can frustrate him to a point of doing something, you're like, you're just kind of continue to be really physical with him and see maybe you get some other explosion out of him. And who knows? Because now you at least know that he is human enough to react to it, which before, I didn't know if he ever was human enough to actually react to any of that stuff.
Poke the bear again.
One guy, though, who doesn't appear that he's that type of player is his fellow Frenchman, is Gobert. I mean, I just can't see, like, if it's Draymond Green, he's poking the bear. He's going and seeing if he can have a repeat of what he just did.
You may see Kyle Slow-Mo Anderson enter just for some
Slow-mo.
Retaliation.
Here's the thing, too, about Minnesota, and I give him a lot of credit. They're sitting there 2-2. Edwards has not even been 100%, although last game he looked more like it. The DiVincenzo loss. There's your big three-point shooter, big outside threat. I just don't know, and again, I'm saying this when they've already won two, but if they have enough offense to help out Anthony Edwards. That's my biggest concern. I mean, the conductor hit two threes last game, Mike Conley.
And that's what hurt about Ayo's calf injury. It was like he was cooking. And then the calf slowed him down.
Great point. That's a great point. I mean, Shannon has to be big to score. Nas can score, but we know he does a bunch of things. And, you know, whatever you get offensively from Gobert other than offensive rebounds is a bonus.
And, of course, Ant's been hyping him up all playoffs, Jay McDaniels.
Another one. What did he do in game four?
Yeah, like 14 or 15.
Yeah.
He's been kind of steady on that.
Problem with McDaniels is not a great outside shooter.
Right.
He's not a great three-point shooter. He likes to do it attacking the rim.
Right. He can come
Shannon
off the
likes to do a lot of his attacking the rim. Yeah. That's fine when Wemby's out of the game.
Right.
When he's in the game, that takes that part away from it for you. So you're, you know, like as soon as he went out of the game, everything they did was go to the rim. Mm-hmm. But when he's in there, that's a whole different ball game.
And even when he's not in there, Luke Kornet still does more than serviceable job at rim protecting, but it's just a different animal with the big fellas back there.
Yeah. I mean, again, yeah, it's Kornet, you'll go and he'll block some, but you're going to score him. Like Wimby, you're not willing
it's
to do it. Yeah, you're not even willing to try it because you know he's lurking back there and you're like, that's just a dumb decision on my part.
All right. And again, that's the only game on the docket tonight, Minnesota, San Antonio, game five. That'll do it for us today. I want to thank Parker Fleming and Mickey Barker, also Scott Fleming for joining us on the program. Tomorrow, we're back starting bright and early at 7 a.m. Among our guests, DeMichael Cole scheduled to join us. I guess he's still in Chicago at the NBA Combine. I think he'll be on with us. James Fletcher will join us as well to break down all the NBA, not all of them, but a good portion of the NBA draft prospects and certainly look at the situation with the Grizzlies, who will be picking number 3.
Well, whether you're buying or selling a home or just want a fast cash offer, give Bubba Sandifer a call at Emmett Baird Realty. 319-0747, 319-0747, that's the number to talk to Bubba. If you're buying, he will make sure that you find that perfect home for you and your family at the right price. If you're selling, if you want to get rid of it quickly, well, he will buy it as is for cash. Or if you're trying to get top dollar, he will make sure to list that home, get you maximum exposure, find serious buyers, and get you the results that you want. That's Bubba Sandifer at Emmett Baird Realty, 901-319-0747. Buying or selling, talk to Bubba.
Wallow and Friends on Sports 56 is coming up next for Eli. For Jay, I'm Greg. Have a great day, everybody.
Not only